From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
This is Money Talk for April 12th, 2019. On the calendar, now you see them, soon you won't. We're talking about Steve Martin and Martin Short at the Riverside Theater, Friday the 19th. The Bucks start their playoff run this weekend at the Forum, and the Brewers are on the left coast with the Dodgers this weekend. Well, nothing good ever happens when someone says, "Here, hold my beer." A couple of good old boys from Arkansas, who have been drinking all night, wondered if their bulletproof vests really work.
Oh, no.
You just know this is going to go south in a hurry. Well, they put on their vests, stepped off in a Burr Hamilton-type duel, and shot at each other multiple times. The good news is they didn't hit anything, including each other. The bad news is they got 30 days in jail to sober up. And finally, Christmas news in April. The Hallmark Channel just announced they'll start airing Christmas movies daily in July, and in October, they'll go 24/7 with Christmas movies. This is not a wonderful life. In the studio today, we have Art Rothschild, Dave Sandstrom, Chris Evers, Joel Dreesang, and wrapping up the week, here's Brian Kilb.
Thanks, Max. First quarter earnings season kicked off with some better-than-expected news coming from the banking sector. They've been punished significantly. The push major index is higher on Friday, with Treasury rates also climbing to close of the week. On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve released minutes from the March meeting, which once again pointed to a low likelihood of rate increases by the end of the year. Just a meeting before, the Federal Reserve was still signaling two more rate increases for this year. And while the Fed no longer appears to be in a position to tighten further, markets may be hoping for a reversal and the Fed to refill the punch bowl. Negotiations with China continue, with reported concessions from the Chinese on key issues as both parties move to the finish line. For the 12th month in a row, the number of job openings exceeded the number of unemployed. A pretty interesting situation in the economy right now. And in spite of the end of the S&P 500's 8-day winning streak, the longest since October of 17, markets made a little bit of money. And for the week, the NASDAQ ended up 45 points, beginning the week at 79.39, closing today at 79.84. The S&P 500 up 15 points to close at 29.07. The Dow Jones Industrial Average gave back 13 points, moving virtually nowhere this week to end the week at 26,412. The 10-year U.S. Treasury, which has been in a pretty tight range throughout the year, began the week at 2.5%. and ended at 2.56%. So we were just kidding around a little bit before the open about maybe just shutting the year down and keeping our 20% on the NASDAQ so far this year, the 16 for the S&P, the Dow Jones up 14. It'd be a pretty good year if we just shut it down right now, Art.
I think it's a great idea. There's an old saying on Wall Street, which we tend to disparage, sell in May and go away. But this is a classic example of a year that, quite frankly, has defied, I think, any reasonable expectations. We had a rough fourth quarter. We had a tremendous first quarter, and it's still off to the races. And you get the sense that stocks are still going to go higher. Nothing but the expectation of, again, a trade deal with China, and the hope that corporate profits that are supposed to be lower this quarter and supposed to be lower in the second quarter are going to turn higher the second half of the year. And continue to go higher in 2020. So I'm done trying to guess where the market's going to go. I'm just pleased that it's gone as far as it's gone so far.
Yeah, that year. May go away in May thing works pretty good after this winter, you know.
I'm kind of
a fan of that right now. Yeah, you know, we were talking in our Monday morning research meeting about earnings, and, you know, we all know that first quarter earnings are coming out now. It's a big deal, and we all know there's a bit of a slowdown. That's a big deal. But I think the news and earnings really is what happens two or three quarters out, and that news isn't so bad. You know, David, I think if you get past the quarter or two where we're pretty sure we're in a slowdown, there is some optimism that things could kick back up, and maybe some of the resilience in the market the last few weeks is really about the third and fourth quarter, not what happens in this earnings phase or the second quarter even.
Yeah, Brian, the markets, of course, are forward-looking, so you got to figure that these first quarter earnings results are pretty much baked in the cake, and markets look to the future and see what the longer-term trend is. A couple of the concerning things I see with some of these earnings calls early on is the two major things that most of the S&P 500 companies are mentioning as headwinds, and currency being number one, and number two being what they're seeing as wage increases. So a couple of things a little bit out of their control at this point. Wages coming up, certainly the first real signs of inflationary pressure that we've gotten in this expansion. And of course, currency headwinds coming from what we're seeing is, you know, slowdown overseas and some of the further relaxed monetary policies we're seeing from some of those central banks. So it'll be interesting to see how this does play out for earnings over the course of 2019.
Yeah, so what do we know now that we didn't know a few weeks ago? Really, I don't think a whole lot, right? I mean, we did get some inflation news. Joel, you can dive into that a little bit, but I don't know that it told us a whole lot, right?
Well, Brian, every week we're looking at these numbers, and it's kind of echoing the same story, is that the economy is slowing. It's still going, but it's slowing down. You know, we had a couple of data points this week. You mentioned already the job openings, that number, and there was another number on initial claims for unemployment insurance. So the four-week average for that is now the lowest it's been since December, the first week of December of 1969. So it's a nearly 50-year low. And that's, Dave, where you're talking about, you know, pressure to raise wages. That's where that comes from. But still, we had, you know, the two biggest measures of inflation, the consumer price index and the producer's price index, and both of those are showing that inflation is still relatively mild. So on the one hand, you know, and remember, the Fed looks at basically two things. They look at the employment picture and they look at inflation. And on the one hand, we see signs that, you know, the employment picture should be pushing inflation up, and yet we're not seeing the inflation.
You know, as Arthur was saying, I mean, we don't get paid to guess, right? But it's hard for me anyway to understand or to grasp that it could get real bad as long as labor's as good as it is and inflation's as low as it is, you know? And I think there are a few of those data points that just really get my attention. And I think anytime you can say there's more available jobs than there are people to fill them, you know, which, you know, if you're an employer, you got to pay a little bit more to get that next person, you know, or you got to pay your people a little bit more to keep them from going to the next person, you know, that I think that enables people as consumers to spend money, you know, as long as earnings continue to look as strong as they do down the road. I have a hard time seeing it get really, really ugly. Yeah. Chris, what are you thinking?
It doesn't seem like a position where wage inflation is really going to take off quickly. I mean, the Fed's been waiting for this wage inflation for years now, where you've seen unemployment drop so substantially. You know, the Fed's been sitting there thinking, well, you know, the situation's always been once unemployment rate dropped to a certain level that we thought was natural, then we'd see a little bit of wage inflation. And it looks like we've crossed that barrier, no wage inflation matriculated, and now we're starting to see a little come along, which would be anticipated, but it's not at any sort of pace that you would imagine would get the Fed nervous that they would have to act further. And you can see that kind of in what the futures market's still saying about what they expect the Fed to do later this year, and they don't really expect much more rate increases yet.
And Chris, we had an early read today on consumer sentiment for April, and what they found there is that consumers are actually encouraged by the little bit of wage inflation that you mentioned, but also that low inflation is kind of, you know, netting out for them, so that they're, even though the consumer sentiment edged down a little bit from where it was at the end of March, if you take the last 30 months, it's still the highest consumer sentiment that's been out there since the last time the economy expanded more than 10 years.
We've talked about this a little the past few weeks, too. You know, the good news, bad news, good news being interpreted badly, et cetera. There was a time in which we wanted to see more inflation, and quite frankly, I think we're getting back to that. You know, we've got to get some inflation, we've got to get wages going up. And as you suggested, if they don't go up too dramatically, if they go up gradually, and I'd love to see the Fed have to raise rates. I think the market is just sucking in too much of the Kool-Aid here with, you know, low interest rates. Oh, boy, we're going to take more risk. On the other hand, I think there is this, it's a very positive atmosphere this year in contrast to the fourth quarter of last year. And if we can keep this going, we could see the stock market keep going. So you don't want to fight the tape, even, and I don't seriously suggest we should sell in May and go away. But it is a reminder, we aren't even back to where we were. It seems like we've gone a lot further, you know, on Wall Street. So to see stocks recover, we're finally getting paid what we should have gotten paid because corporate profits were up 20% last year. So we can maintain and grow from here over the long haul. I think the market's telling us this is a good thing and could continue.
You know, Arthur, I think you make a pretty good point. I mean, if you really kind of dismiss the fourth quarter and the first quarter recovery because of the fourth quarter, you kind of feel like you're sort of where you're supposed to be, like where you thought you were going to be all along. So then you kind of go, well, so what are the catalysts forward then, right? I mean, it's one of my favorite words, you know, and I think, for one, I think China's a big deal, you know, mm-hmm. and it's not just a big deal because, you know, what happens between the two largest economies in the world does matter to everybody. You know, unlike, I think, this whole Brexit thing, I think what's happening between China and the U.S. really matters. And I think were we to get to the finish line in those negotiations and dismiss this idea of a trade war, it would have obvious implications for global growth. Beyond that, it also would suggest, I think, that the ability for the two largest economies, politically diverse, culturally diverse, to sit down at the table and make some progress, meet in the middle, talk to each other as human beings, would have a far greater message than perhaps even the objective measurement of tariffs and trade wars or whatever. I mean, my gosh, our own Congress can't even sit down at the table and decide anything. So, you know, maybe I'm being overly optimistic as to the potential impact of that, but that could be, in my opinion, a catalyst either way. I mean, because we're pretty near the finish line, so I hear, but you know how these things are. They aren't done until they're done. So it could have some pretty nasty implications if things fall apart.
And, Brian, we're starting to see some of the pretty massive stimulus measures that China's taken over the last year mm-hmm. looking like they're starting to stimulate a little bit in their economy. And it's only been a couple of months now, but at least we've seen that trend reverse with their growth numbers. Housing for them, especially in this first quarter, had a significant improvement. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they're throwing a lot of free money at the banks to try to incite people to make those home purchases. So, but that's good news. Obviously, like you said, second largest economy in the world makes a big difference to what's going on, just not only here, but the rest of Europe as well.
And to extent the, how this ties in a little bit even to the inflation numbers, I think that there was a little bit of nervousness around this changing trade patterns and what this would eventually do to consumer goods. I mean, so much of this you know, deflationary pressure that we've seen over the last decade of holding inflation down has been that goods have been so cheap because we've been able to import them from the cheapest cost producer. Now, when you begin putting into question all the global trade patterns, when you start a conflict like this, you begin to worry that maybe the cost of goods are going to start going up as we're no longer able to, you know, constructing in the cheapest position able. But so going forward, if we can return to those trade patterns, that should also keep it down on inflation.
Let's kind of circle back to portfolios and, you know, so what are we doing these days based on the discussion of where we're at and where we might be? We've had, a couple of years worth of conversations about value versus growth, and, you know, growth continues to kind of lead the charge this year, although, you know, you've made some money on the value side too. Small caps have done pretty well. A lot of talk about going overseas. Where are you guys heading with your portfolios in relationship to potentially these future catalysts or how things might change in the future?
Yeah, I'm quite frankly spending more time on the fixed income side, as we've discussed repeatedly in these sessions. I'm trying to keep my duration short because, as we saw this week, interest rates can go up, and if interest rates go up, the value of longer-term bonds can go down. And furthermore, the euphoria around junk bonds this year that have sent the returns on those things higher and I think the risk greater. So I'm making more changes in the fixed income parts of my portfolio. I spent last year, I think, adjusting more to put in more conservative stocks, which did start to respond more favorably later in the year. I expect that trend to continue. So I still think the action is going to be with the growth stocks. We want to have those. And it's nice to see small stocks improve, but still there's more risk there. It's nice to see emerging markets improve. There's still more risk there. So I'm spending more time still working on reducing risk. I don't want to take on more.
You know, Art, I love your comment about lower quality, you know, credit issues and stuff. And And I think it's one of those things that I like to tell people these days. It really doesn't matter when it's going to happen, when credit deteriorates, how credit deteriorates. I don't want to be there when it happens. Like, there's some things, you know, you're kind of like, okay, I'm going to buy cheap and it's going to get expensive. When credit deteriorates, I don't want to be there. You know, and I think, what do you give up for the little bit of yield or spread, you know, the difference between the safer stuff and the more or less creditworthy stuff to get out and completely avoid that whole thing? So I think that's really smart, because I just don't, you know, if I'm going to tell you that 40% of your portfolio or whatever is for safety, and all of a sudden part of that's getting whacked pretty good, that's just not going to make you happy as an investor. And I love that idea, getting out before you know, we even care when this thing turns the other way.
Brian, I think balance is king, and I think if, you know, if anyone needs that stark reminder about why you stay balanced, is what exactly what happened in December. Mm-hmm. Because when you see that abrupt of a turn to the downside, and if you can't stomach it because you're taking too much risk and you get out, look at how quickly we got it all back. And if you got out, I just about bet that you didn't have the guts to get back in time to make this upswing. So having the proper amount of risk to keep yourself invested is so important, because trying to time the market can be devastating.
Yeah, I'll tell you guys a funny story. Chris and I went out to a client the other day that we have a manager 401k plan for. And, you know, I've been out there for a few years. We bring up a Fishing Frontier theory every once in a while and kind of try and remind people that, really, if you get much beyond 80% in stocks, it can be detrimental, you know, if you catch the wrong 10-year period, even as we did after the financial crisis, you actually would have lost money by having that additional risk. So having preached to those guys a few times over the last few years, I was able to share with them that their entire 401k plan, if you add it up, is in excess of 80% in stocks. So, you know, you go, okay, apparently I'm not doing a great job of explaining this to people. But people do have that tendency when things are going well to lean in pretty hard. And it's a good reminder right now that we got back what we got in the fourth quarter, that if you're being too aggressive, take your foot off the gas, because it can cause you problems.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really true, that it's so difficult to time the market, because your emotions are always going to be pulling you in the opposite direction of what you probably should be doing in that moment. You know, I like to think, hopefully, that those 401k participants likely were below 80%, but got pushed up because of the market rebound really over the last 3 months. So hopefully that's what the case was.
Yeah, let's fly with that.
Yeah.
You know, surprisingly, back to bonds, Arthur, there's I haven't heard a lot of talk the last couple of weeks about negative yield curves and inverted yield curves and stuff. It's been pretty quiet on that front lately, as, you know, got a little bit of a bump in the 10-year throughout the week. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But, you know, kind of the tail end of this conversation, when we talk about catalysts and potentially spend some time on what could happen and what we think might happen, at the end of the day, it's still quite often that the problems are caused by things we don't see coming. So back to balance and back to the role of bonds in your portfolio, always a really good idea not to get too far astray from your comfort zone and your safety place, and because it is for the long run, and you don't want to damage yourself too much. Final thought about the weeks, anybody?
Go Bucks.
Go Bucks, big week. Got a green river. Let's see what happens. Let's see if we can get those guys healthy and see if the Brewers can end their early losing streak. A lot of baseball to be played there. Thanks for joining us this week. We'll be back next week. Appreciate you, everybody, tuning in, and love doing the show. And have a safe weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.